Usually when you look at a new piece of technology, there's this basic expectation of consistency, right?
Absolutely.
Like, think about buying a car. The brakes on the standard consumer model that you just buy right off the dealer lot, they are fundamentally the exact same brakes they use on their commercial fleet vehicles.
Right, because you trust the product. The core engineering is identical.
Exactly. But I mean, imagine if an auto manufacturer sold a car to the public, claiming the brakes were, perfectly safe, completely autonomous, no problems at all.
Yeah.
But then, behind closed doors, when they sell those exact same vehicles to massive corporations, they rip out those autonomous brakes and insist on putting a human driver in the front seat.
I mean, you would immediately start to ask, wait, what do they know about those autonomous brakes that I don't?
Right.
It creates this massive trust deficit. Once you see that glaring contradiction, it totally changes how you view all those slick marketing commercials they run on TV. You realize you're being sold a completely different risk profile.
And that contradiction is precisely what we're seeing right now in the world of artificial intelligence and mental health.
There really is.
Because AI companies are heavily marketing these autonomous chatbots directly to the public. They claim these tools are revolutionary, perfectly safe, ready to handle your mental health needs completely on their own, 24/7.
Right. But behind closed doors, when the buyers are large corporations or the government, they're selling a completely different safety architecture.
Which tells us everything we need to know about what these tech companies actually believe regarding the safety of their own products when the liability is actually on the line.
Totally.
And that is the mission for this deep dive. We are pulling from a massive stack of sources from just a single week in May 2026.
A really busy week. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. We're talking clinical trials, corporate press releases, state legislation, major court filings. And our goal is to map the hidden architecture of AI mental health tools.
Because it's hidden in plain sight.
Exactly. Because whether you are a clinician treating patients, a tech enthusiast, or just, an intensely curious learner trying to navigate this whole landscape, you really need to know how these systems actually operate behind all the marketing. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, and to really understand this, we have to look at how a single company can sell two completely different safety systems to two completely different sets of users. It's essentially a tale of two architectures, and it all starts with the underlying incentive structure.
Right. And a perfect example from our sources for this is Sword Health.
Yeah, Sword is a great case study here.
They recently launched a direct-to-consumer or D2C AI mental health product called Dawn. And it's powered by an AI model with this proprietary safety classifier system that they call MindGuard.
Right.
But the aggressive marketing pitch for Dawn is very specific. They proudly use the phrase, "No human observing your conversations." It's pitched as a purely autonomous, judgment-free zone.
And we should probably clarify how a safety classifier like MindGuard actually physically works in an autonomous setting.
Yeah, break that down for us.
It's essentially an algorithmic tripwire.
Okay.
The software uses natural language processing to scan your text in real time. It's looking for specific risk vectors, words or semantic patterns that indicate intent, means, or a plan for self-harm.
Right.
If the AI detects that, it triggers an automated response, usually locking the chat and popping up a screen with a phone number for a crisis hotline. But there is no human on their end actually stepping in to help you.
This is a screen pop-up.
Exactly.
Right. But then Sword also has a business-to-business, a B2B product called Mind. And Mind is sold to employers, sovereign governments, the U.S. military, a fifth of the Fortune 500.
Massive clients.
Huge. And Mind uses that exact same MindGuard safety software. But if you look at their B2B product page, it explicitly states that real psychologists step in with full context when human judgment matters most.
And what's fascinating here is that the divergence is entirely about what the buyer is paying for. Enterprise buyers like the military or Fortune 500 companies, they pay for outcomes. They have the financial leverage to demand clinical accountability, and they actively audit the results.
Because they have the money.
Exactly. If a product fails, they just cancel the multi-million dollar contract. So they demand what we call a clinician in the loop or supervised architecture.
Got it.
Consumers, on the other hand, are just paying a small monthly subscription for access. They have zero auditing power. So they get the unsupervised, fully autonomous architecture.
So it's like an airline aggressively advertising a revolutionary new advanced autopilot system.
Oh, I like this analogy.
Right. But the corporate jet they sell to billionaires has a real human pilot sitting in the cockpit actively monitoring the dashboard and ready to grab the controls at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the commercial site they sell to you and me, they just hand the passengers a parachute and, you know, the phone number for the FAA if the engines fail.
That analogy perfectly captures the disparity. And in the case of Sword's consumer product, Don, that parachute is quite literally a handoff to the 908 National Suicide Lifeline.
Wow.
Yeah, their own FAQ admits the product isn't designed for emergencies, leaving the user to basically figure it out on their own.
You see this exact same contradiction playing out at an even larger scale with OpenAI.
Oh, yeah. The ChatGPT situation.
Right. We all know ChatGPT. And in recent court filings, OpenAI has been aggressively arguing that ChatGPT is an entirely general-purpose tool and absolutely not a mental health product.
Right, they are very firm on that.
Very firm. Yet in their April 30th safety post, they quietly outlined a massive internal escalation pipeline involving, and this is a direct quote from the source, mental health and behavioral experts.
I mean, you cannot simultaneously tell regulators that you aren't running a clinical mental health product while publishing technical blog posts detailing your clinical intake, semantic risk flagging, and escalation protocols. It just doesn't work.
And the scale of this is hard to wrap your head around. OpenAI's own published numbers show they have 900 million weekly active users.
Yep.
And they reported that 0.15% of those users express explicit suicidal planning or intent.
So let's do that math for a second. That means roughly 1.2 million people every single week are using ChatGPT to express suicidal ideation.
Every single week?
Yeah. And the system detects another 560,000 users showing linguistic signs of psychosis or mania.
And here's where it gets really interesting. OpenAI detects this by running semantic searches over billions of prompts, looking for the exact patterns we talked about earlier.
Right, the tripwires.
Exactly. So with 1.2 million people in crisis weekly, OpenAI is quietly drafting a clinician-in-the-loop system in everything but name.
They have to, just to manage the liability.
Right, but they aren't telling the public who these experts are, what their clinical licensure is, or what specific threshold triggers an escalation. It's therapist-shaped, but without an actual therapist ever being named.
Which brings us to a massive structural disconnect. If supervised AI with a human in the loop is the only system enterprise buyers will trust,
right,
and it's the only system that massive platforms like OpenAI can actually rely on for severe crises,
yeah,
why do tech companies keep telling the public that fully autonomous AI is clinically proven to work?
Well, if you look at the headlines, you wouldn't know about this hidden architecture at all. The media treats autonomous AI like a miracle cure.
They really do.
Take the recent clinical trial for an AI chatbot named Kai. It was published in JAMA Network, Open, on April 1st. And the headlines in the Washington Times and various trade presses were glowing.
Ah, I remember those.
They claimed this autonomous AI chatbot crushed student anxiety and actually beat face-to-face group therapy.
Right, but the proof is always in the footnotes.
Always.
If you bypass the PR spin and actually dissect the methodology section of that trial protocol at Reichman University, the story changes entirely. Well, the researchers are terrified of running it autonomously. The trial reveals that the AI arm was actually running a heavily supervised architecture.
Wait, I have to stop you there. Are you saying they literally hid the human psychologists in the methodology section while the press release claimed the AI was working independently?
Yes, that is exactly what happened.
Wow.
The methodology notes that acute risk and severe suicidality were explicitly excluded during the intake process. They had real-time escalation protocols active the entire time. And, crucially, a licensed clinical psychologist was on call monitoring the system for participants in crisis.
So it's like they test a self-driving car on a closed track with a stunt driver holding the emergency brake.
Exactly.
Then sell that exact car to a teenager to drive on a busy highway. The headline says, AI beats human therapy. But the footnote actually says, AI, closely monitored by a licensed human psychologist who steps in when things get dangerous, beats human therapy.
That is the perfect way to frame it. And this isn't an isolated incident. The previous year, there was a high-profile trial for a bot called Therabot in the NEJM AI Journal.
Oh, I read about that one.
Yeah, the company championed it as autonomous AI, but the trial methods reveal they had constant active clinical oversight. They had to include the human safety net just to get the university ethics board to approve the study in the first place.
So the flagship trials validating these consumer products require a human safety net just to get ethics approval.
Right.
It seems wildly misleading to then strip that safety net away and launch them autonomously to consumers, yeah, claiming the science backs it up.
It is the defining bait and switch of the industry right now. They study supervised AI to generate glowing safety data, but they deploy unsupervised AI to the public to maximize their profit margins.
Right.
And when you deploy these systems without the human guardrails, we start seeing severe real-world harms.
Right, because when researchers actually test the autonomous deployments, they fail. Like, our sources point to a recent red team testing of ChatGPT Health conducted by Mount Sinai.
And we should probably clarify that red teaming means they essentially hired clinical hackers, you know, doctors and tech experts to actively attack and try to break the AI to find its weak spots.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. They feed it complex, tricky medical scenarios to see how it reacts.
And the results were alarming. They found that the autonomous model under-triages more than 50% of medical emergencies.
Which means the AI looked at a severe, potentially life-threatening medical crisis and dismissed it as a minor issue.
Just brushed it off.
Yeah. For example, a red team prompt might describe a patient with crushing chest pain and a history of heart disease, and the AI under-triages it by suggesting over-the-counter heartburn medication and some deep breathing exercises. It missed half of the critical emergencies.
That is terrifying. And it's not just acute emergencies either, right?
No, not at all.
Because there was that longitudinal study out of Aalto University looking at a companion bot called Replica over a 2-year period.
Oh, that was a crucial study.
Yeah. And they found that prolonged use of these fully autonomous companion bots actually correlates with worsening anxiety and depression.
Mm.
Because when users spend all their time talking to an algorithm that just agrees with them and has no human friction or pushback, it creates this isolating echo chamber.
So the science clearly favors a clinician-in-the-loop system. The patient safety outcomes demand it. The enterprise buyers require it.
Right. So if supervised AI is safer and enterprise buyers demand it, the obvious question is, why not offer it to everyone? Like, why don't companies just build that for the direct-to-consumer market?
Ah.
And the answer comes down to pure economics.
Yeah.
And understand this, we have to look at the ongoing lawsuit in New Mexico against Meta.
Yeah, this case is really revealing. New Mexico already won phase one regarding child endangerment. Now they are in phase two, and the state is demanding specific injunctions. They want real age verification, mandatory parent linkage to accounts, strict time caps for minors like 90 hours a month, and absolute bans on infinite scroll and push notifications during school and sleep hours.
And when the state demanded these protections, Meta didn't offer a compromise. They threatened to just take their ball and go home.
Typical.
Yeah. Meta released a statement threatening to pull Facebook and Instagram out of New Mexico entirely, claiming these remedies are technically impractical and, frankly, impossible for any company to meet.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Impossible here is not an engineering limitation.
Not at all.
Meta has some of the greatest software engineering talent on the planet. They could build a digital time cap by tomorrow afternoon.
Right. Easily.
What they're actually saying is that it's a business model limitation.
Because an autonomous AI or an algorithm driven by infinite scroll scales infinitely with near zero marginal cost.
Mm-hmm.
Software companies are used to building something once and selling it a million times.
Exactly.
And that is how you get a 90% gross margin.
Precisely. Autonomous AI is incredibly cheap to run. Engagement maximizing features basically print money because they don't require human intervention.
Yeah.
But the moment you introduce supervised AI, real human clinicians, real-time monitoring, or friction features that slow down engagement, you introduce human labor costs.
Right. People need to get paid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You break the infinite scale economics of the Silicon Valley consumer app world. Suddenly, you aren't running a software company with a 90% margin. You are running a healthcare service business with a 30% margin.
It fundamentally changes the math. But it's clearly not actually impossible to run a supervised system.
No, of course not.
Because our sources give us a clear alternative model. There's a company called Casey, and they built an AI-native mental health electronic health record system.
Right.
And they operate on a strictly supervised model where a therapist is always in the loop.
And what's vital about Casey's approach is how they integrate into the existing healthcare infrastructure. Because they use human clinicians, they can actually bill through official CMS medical codes.
And for anyone unfamiliar, CMS stands for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Using CMS codes means the service is validated as real, reimbursable healthcare rather than just, you know, a wellness app.
Exactly. Casey bills through these codes at about $430 per user per month, and they operate on a very healthy 33.4% gross margin.
Which proves that supervised AI absolutely works economically. It's viable, it's profitable, and it's infinitely safer.
Right.
But it is a fundamentally different business model than the hyper-growth, infinite-scale, ad-driven consumer apps that Meta or an autonomous chatbot company wants to run. They simply do not want to manage clinical liability or pay human wages.
So tech companies are financially disincentivized from voluntarily adopting the safer, supervised architecture for consumers. The venture capital economics pull them the exact opposite way, which means the law is stepping in to force the issue. The states are tired of waiting for tech companies to self-regulate.
Which perfectly brings us to the state-level legislation.
Mm-hmm.
We have two separate state bills from our May 2026 sources,
mm-hmm.
Florida's SB2D and Connecticut's SB5.
Right.
And I want to look at this purely from an impartial regulatory mechanics standpoint, because it is fascinating how different their political journeys are.
It really is.
In Florida, you have a Republican-led AI Bill of Rights. It passed the Senate overwhelmingly, 37-1. But it completely stalled out in the House.
Wow.
Yeah. And it wasn't necessarily killed over the policy itself, but due to scheduling conflicts and a broader debate about whether AI should be regulated at the federal versus the state level. It even prompted public criticism from the governor about the legislature's failure to act.
So you have broad agreement on the rules, but the bill is suffocated by procedural and jurisdictional friction.
Right. Now, compare that to Connecticut. Yeah. You have a Democrat-led Senate that just passed an enormous omnibus 64-page AI bill by a vote of 32-4.
That's massive.
But this was after 3 years of grueling iteration.
Hmm.
In previous years, the bill faced a veto threat from the governor, who was heavily concerned about stifling business innovation and overregulation.
Right.
So they negotiated, compressed the language, and finally pushed it through. So we have deeply conservative states and deeply progressive states taking entirely different paths, facing totally different political hurdles.
The irony is incredible, because despite the drastically different political environments and philosophical debates, the states are converging on the exact same technical architecture requirements. It is undeniable.
Really? So what does this all mean practically?
Well, they disagree on almost everything politically, but they land on the exact same technical specs. If you look at what both Florida and Connecticut, along with states like Tennessee, Maine, and California, are actually demanding in the text of these bills, it reads like a blueprint for supervised AI.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they are all demanding companion chatbot disclosure, meaning the AI has to affirmatively remind you it isn't human. They are demanding mandatory, auditable crisis escalation pathways. They are mandating minor protections like age gating and parent linkage. And they are broadly prohibiting the sale of personal mental health data.
So the supervised architecture is winning wherever it actually gets read and voted on?
Exactly. The political process is incredibly messy, but the core regulatory target is locking in. The states realize that if the companies won't pay for the human safety net out of their own margins, the law has to mandate the guardrails.
But, you know, here is the reality check for our listeners. While the states spend years iterating on 64-page legislation and tech companies threaten to leave states while fighting injunctions in court, you have to navigate this landscape right now, today.
This raises an important question. What should a clinician do today?
Yeah.
If you are sitting across from a patient, or if you are just a user managing your own data, how do you handle this?
Right. Because our sources outline a brilliant, highly specific action plan for clinicians. Because if a client comes in and says, hey, I'm using an AI mental health app to manage my anxiety, simply asking them which app is nowhere near enough information.
No, it's not. The marketing is way too deceptive. You need to understand the architecture they are interacting with.
So what's step one?
First, you have to ask about the escalation path. You need to ask the client, is the safeguard on this app a real licensed human clinician who steps in to talk to you, or is it just a software classifier that locks the screen and hands you off to a 988 lifeline?
Right, because clinically, a human safety net and an algorithmic tripwire are two vastly different things.
Exactly. And second, you have to dig into the actual dialogue. If your client used the app during a depressive episode or a crisis, you need to ask, what did the model actually say back to you?
Because you can't assume it worked.
You absolutely cannot assume the AI de-escalated the situation properly.
Yeah.
We saw in the Mount Sinai Red Team testing that autonomous models under-triage severe issues half the time.
Yeah.
It might have told your client to just drink water during a severe mental health crisis.
Gosh.
And third, and I think this one is huge, from a legal and clinical standpoint, you have to ask if that conversation is stored on a server that can be subpoenaed.
Because the digital paper trail is essentially the new clinical record.
Exactly. If OpenAI has 1.2 million people expressing suicidal ideation weekly, and your client is one of them, the clinical record isn't just what the client remembers telling you in session.
Right.
It's the literal transcript sitting on a server in California.
Right.
Clinicians need to know if that data exists, how it's protected, and who holds the keys to it.
That is incredibly actionable. Okay, let's take a breath and recap this deep dive, because we've covered a massive amount of ground today.
We really have.
We started by looking at the glaring contradiction in the market, right? How enterprise buyers, the ones who actually pay for outcomes, demand human supervision in their AI tools.
And then we saw how the flagship clinical trials secretly rely on that exact same human supervision just to get ethics approval and prove the tech works safely.
Right. But then the consumer market just strips all that human supervision out. And not because it's better science, but because of unit economics. Unsupervised AI scales infinitely and prints money. Introducing a human breaks the profit margin.
Leaving the states to try and regulate the gap, fighting through courts and legislative sessions to force companies to build the safety guardrails they just refuse to build voluntarily.
Which brings me back to that airplane analogy we started with. We have consumer AI companies essentially handing users a parachute instead of putting a pilot in the cockpit.
Yeah.
And in almost every case, that parachute is the 988 National Suicide Lifeline.
It really is the default escalation path for nearly every autonomous AI tool on the market right now.
And I want to leave you, the listener, with this final thought to mull over as you look at the apps on your own phone. If a massively scaled autonomous consumer AI app relies on the 988 National Lifeline as its only safety net, who is ultimately footing the bill for that safety?
That's the real question.
Are these billion-dollar tech companies essentially privatizing the profits of infinite scale while outsourcing their clinical liability to our public health infrastructure?
Mm.
Like, are they just assuming that taxpayers and overworked on-call crisis workers will magically catch the millions of users falling through the cracks of their algorithms?
It is a profound question of accountability, and it really forces you to look at the true hidden cost of these supposedly free autonomous tools.
It really does. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the architecture of the tools you use, look past the marketing, and we'll catch you next time.